Welcome back to Too Much Future, the show about the Fallout games that we do. This is episode 11. My name's Cameron.
I'm Michael.
Before we begin, Michael, I wanted to ask you something that's been really bugging me. You know, this is a game that's about roads, and they're often broken, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that new song "Rascal" by Rumor?
I have no opinion.
No opinion at all?
No, I don't. I'm not sure if I've heard it.
Okay. Well, everyone get in the comments. Let us know. Maybe link it to Michael on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's quite good.
Is it related to Fleetwood Mac's Rumors in any way?
It could be.
Okay.
I don't know. Probably not. It's more closely related to another song. This is like
the Star Wars theme?
It weirdly enough, it does begin. Obviously, that's my interpretation of the Star Wars theme. Michael, in this episode, we are talking about perhaps the most disappointing thing we've encountered in a video game in a minute.
Yeah.
Would you say that's true?
Yeah. No. MODOK is just kind of a wet napkin of an experience.
What? Okay, so first off, why did we go to MODOK in this episode?
All right, so we were actually not going to MODOK. We were going to Vault City, because that's where we've been told by Vic that he got the water flask that he somehow, like the Vault 13 water flask that he somehow picked up. But as you are walking to Vault City, presumably you're leaving from the den at this point in the game, mm-hmm. you will kind of naturally on your way out encounter an unknown region, like the green little circle on your map that tells you that it's a place that you can go to. And when you go to this unknown little place, it is a small town called MODOK. And so you just kind of like, if you choose, right, you actually don't even have to go to MODOK if you don't want to. You could just keep going and go straight to Vault City. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is kind of open world design as it would have existed in 97, where you just kind of encounter a place and you can stop and check it out if you like. So we stopped and we checked it out.
Now, would you say that this unknown location, would you say it's a known unknown, perhaps an unknown unknown? An unknown known or known?
I don't know. I'm going to get out my Ouija board and call up the spirit of Rumsfeld here.
Rumsfeld dead?
I don't know. Is he? Oh, okay. He's a lich. The Ouija boards, just so you know, work with liches, so I'll just call him up that way. Yeah, okay. Born in 1932, no publicly recorded date of death as of yet.
Publicly recorded is very critical.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting what happened to him in the Stein regime. I know we can't get into it, but you know, just the way that she's been working. And
yeah. But thank God the Stein regime has embraced Ouija boards.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. It's really cool to be able to go and get them from the government depository.
Mm-hmm.
But I digress. We are going to MODOK. We go to MODOK. It's just in the way, like you're saying. So, like all good video game content, it's just in the way. You just got to get through it.
It's something in between you and the thing you need to get to. That is all video games.
Isn't that really just the story of video games? It's something to do between now and when you're done with whatever you're doing in your life.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so I'm looking at my Vault City notes. I have the wrong page here. So this was a hard journey. So before we even get to MODOK, Tungsten had a rough time. And this could be because Tungsten, I think, was only level 4.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Well, because you went and fought a bunch of geckos, right? Did mm-hmm. a bunch of gecko fights. I did not do any of that. So I think I need to do some, like, backfilling of just running around and smashing things with a hammer.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm at least, at this point in the game, I'm at least, like, level 5 or 6, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was pretty close to level 5, but that pretty close actually mattered quite a bit. I had to fight a bunch of rad scorpions on the way. I had to fight like a bunch of dogs at one point.
Oh my god!
What is pretty interesting, you know, I've already talked about this before, but what's interesting at this point is that combat difficulty is tuned around how many enemies are there.
Yep.
You know, it's rarely about like one big strong enemy, right? It's mm-hmm. so much more about like, oh, here's 1,000 scorpions to fight. And, yes. You know, as I have the critical miss perk thing,
it is,
again, like I've said in the previous episode, most fights are just like, dog bites itself, deals 5 damage, knocks itself down. Rad scorpion breaks its own leg. Tungsten
we
drops
live
weapon.
In a fallen world.
it's really terrible. But yeah, so there's just a huge amount of that going on. And then occasionally I get hit for like a massive critical that kills me. but yeah, so it's interesting. And I was telling you before we started recording, I played this game here for about 20 minutes, 20, 25 minutes, slowly crawling my way across the wasteland to make my way to this unknown zone. And my game crashed. Because Fallout 2, not super stable, more stable than you know, probably other games from the time, but still not 100 stable. And so I lost a lot of content here. But yeah, for the most part, all my combats are just like a bunch of people missing and skipping their turn because they hurt themselves and things like that. But then I finally pulled into MODOK, and we get a little descriptor line. It says it's a little sleepy town that is surrounded by, quote, vast fields of dead or dying crops.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you do in MODOK, Michael?
So I think like the first place that I saw in MODOK was kind of like a little general store. And there's a person in there in the back. I think I've mentioned this, but there, even though there's a day-night cycle in Fallout 2, just as there was in Fallout 1, people don't yell at you as much for talking to them at night, by which I mean they don't do it at all. They'll still talk to you and trade with you. So I went to the general store and I talked to this person named Joe. And they informed me of a couple things. One's like, yeah, welcome to MODOK. We're a little farming town, but there's a drought going on. And that's kind of a problem. It's a problem for us. But in general, we have some Brahmin herders. There's a slaughterhouse. People make jerky here. There's a bed and breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Your classic post-apocalyptic bed and breakfast. And there's also a church in the center of town that no one goes to anymore on account of the drought, I guess, having shaken everyone's faith in God.
Yeah, it's really, I think this is another moment where we see the designer's opinion on faith. Coming in, there are actually a couple times over what we played for this and the next episode where like faith comes up again. Mm-hmm. Some pretty deeply critical opinions, I think, here about religion, because explicitly it's like no one goes to church anymore because nothing is good.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is good anymore. Let me ignore the often how religion functions for people in times of crisis.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's my
this
developer
kind of,
voice.
That's, yeah.
That's what Fallout developers sound like to me.
Well, and this is one of the things there's also a leather worker who I guess will kind of come up, a tannery. And this is one of the things that makes, as I said, MODOK is kind of a wet napkin of an area. This is one of the things that contributes to that because, yeah, there is a church in the center of town, and yeah, no one goes there, but also no one in town, I think, is a preacher or anything, and no one outside of this very specific comment you get from Joe, to me at least, even talked about the church. And also, you can't fix this. By the end of this, it's not like you've, introduced everyone in MODOK to the tenets of rational materialism. Or anything like that, or that you've like restored their faith in God. It's just a thing.
Mm-hmm. It's deeply unfortunate that across none of these Fallout games you know, there's no, like, cult of Marx. Like, that'd be fun, right?
That would be fun. And would honestly, well, I guess it would, I was going to say, it would make a lot of sense, but we don't really know, like, what the status of Marxism was in the Fallout universe prior to the war, so whatever.
Well, they share the same history up until, like, World War II, right?
Something like that, yeah.
So, you know, it's at least the history is there. But I would love, like, like the cult of dialectical materialism that would, and it would be like a bunch of ghouls, and they would be like, we had to be irradiated to create the material conditions of struggle that produce society.
Well, we'll talk about this, I guess, next episode, right? But the ghouls do tend to, like, conglomerate around industrial locations, so that's interesting.
The infinite proletariat, the ghoul.
Yep. Anyway, yeah, so none of that's going on in MODOK. This is a town of cows and beds and breakfasts.
It's true. Yeah, and all the things you can do with a cow and all the things you can do with a bed and breakfast. So there are two, I think there's really only two quests here, right?
Yeah, no, I think there's probably maybe, like, three quests. So the other thing that makes this place feel like a wet napkin is that there aren't that many quests, and also, I ended up not being able to really do many of them for various bizarre reasons. Hmm. So how did this go for Tungsten? Did Tungsten talk to Joe, or...
Yeah, so the main quest, right, is that you get started, you talk to Joe, and he tells you about all these places, and he's, like, running, like, it's a trading outpost or something like that, right? He's running that thing. By the way, you can just stand behind him and loot his entire inventory off of the shelf behind him, if you're interested in doing that. Tungsten, despite having no stealing or stealth ability, steals so much stuff over MODOK in Vault City. Just rifling through everyone's goods right in front of them and no one can see it. It's awesome.
And I'm imagining Tungsten, you know, like 6'8". Like, just sort of, like, stumbling around behind Joe, like, knocking things off the shelves and shoving them in his pockets.
Yeah, it's absolutely a scenario of, like, grabbing the side of the shelf and just throwing it onto the floor. And, like, whatever goes anywhere, you're like, I need that, I need that, I need that. I'm looting.
Joe just gazes wistfully out the window.
Mm-hmm. But he's not gazing wistfully, Michael, because... Oh. How about that? How about that, zinger there, because the town is in crisis because of the drought, and there's a haunted farm.
Dun, dun, dun.
So he says, because, you know, I'm going everywhere. Tungsten's running around this universe saying, hey, you got a Gek? Anybody got a Gek? Anyone know anything about the Gek? I need the Garden of Eden creation kit. I don't know what it is or what it looks like or really even what it does, but I would prefer to have one. Thank you. And so I asked Joe about it, and he's like, I know where one is. I know all about the Gek, buddy. But you see, on the outskirts of town, and he points through the window, and the camera pushes through the window, and begins a sweeping, Spielbergian shot. On the outskirts of town, there's a farm where the crops are growing just fine, where the Brahmin are doing just A-okay, and where, but a short time ago, a farm seemed to appear overnight. And we sent a guy named Carl there, and Carl worked the farm, but then disappeared.
Dun, dun, dun. And they then, call it the ghost farm.
The ghost farm! And it's also kind of the murder farm, because now when we go there, we can see on, like, stakes outside, there's guts and gore and human corpses everywhere.
Crucified!
Boo! Boo! Do not go to the ghost farm! Boo!
So, except actually, yes, go to the ghost farm.
Please, please. On our behalf. Let me correct myself. Go to the ghost farm! Boo, 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 boo. That's kind of the big main quest for here. So, what the hell's going on at the ghost farm?
Yeah. The weird thing about this for me is Joe didn't talk to me about this.
At all?
At all. Not at first. So my experience in MODOK was showing up, and I think maybe it was because it was at night. He just sort of told me about the town, and I was like, all right, that's neat. And then I went and I explored the town, and we'll talk about what happened around MODOK. And I was just like, is there anything else going on here? And I went back and talked to Joe, and that's when he told me about the ghost farm, after I'd already kind of, like, met everyone here and done stuff and just been like, what is happening? Why did they even put this in my way?
Why would you do this to me?
Well, it's just, I assume, right? I assume that this game was designed, and there was something that the designers would have wanted me to see or notice here, but as it sort of transpired for me, that just did not become evident until I went back and talked to Joe, I guess, during the day.
So what is your what'd you learn about the ghost farm?
I went to the ghost farm and how did this work? Yeah, so it's exactly like Joe says. Two things, actually. The first thing was I knew where Carl was. I didn't know I knew this, but apparently I had met Carl before in the den, and it had made no impression on me. So I'm not really sure where I met him or how, because, like, I did not record this information in my mind. But I met Carl in the den, and he had apparently told me that he had been at this farm and he had been scared away. So I could tell Joe immediately, oh yeah, no, like that Carl guy, I just met him. He's in the den. He's fine. So a little bit of an anticlimax there. But then Joe has me go check out the rest of the farm. You know, like, we'll go figure out what's going on, because the story that he tells, that there were, like, weird, you know, strange ghostly people walking around, and he was just so frightened that he had to flee. Mm-hmm. That still needs explanation. So I go to the ghost farm. It's, like, northeast of the town, and as I said, it's basically just as Joe describes it. It's, like, a farmhouse in the middle of a bunch of crops, and there are, like, these giant pikes sitting out, and there are what appear to be corpses dangling from them. So I went into the house, and then I guess got knocked out or something, because then the screen goes dark, and when it lights back up again, Sulik and I am just, like, lying on the ground in this underground cavern while Sulik stands by with his giant hammer. So it's like, great job, Sulik. I'm glad you're with me for this.
There's a lot of MODOK features quite a bit of falling and fading to black, or exploding and fading to black. We'll talk about in a minute. But and then, like, you're having your companions do weird stuff. That's a little preview of what's coming up.
So then I was underground, and there are armed guards talking to me, and I'm in this, like, sort of big cave system, and there are people walking around, and the models that they're using for them look like they look like the ghoul models, right? Or rather, they are just the ghoul models, and the guards are like, so-and-so wants to talk to you. They have a leader, and I can't remember his name. It's, like, something bizarre. It's, like, Vegnir or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is something like that. I don't think I wrote it down.
Yeah, so they're like, hey, go talk to him, or he needs to talk to you. So you walk around, like, you go down through the little cavern. There are people, there's, like, a little farm down here, and by farm I mean, like, they've got some giant mole rats pinned up.
Yeah, I thought that was just great.
Yeah, no, it's very cute.
The underground Brahmin.
And then when you go and you talk you can talk to the sort of people wandering around, some of whom are just kind of, like, civilians, I guess, and some of whom are armed. They talk up, they're like, oh, what is the sun look like?
Like, yeah, that is one of their little, like, over-the-head dialogues.
Yeah. So then you go and you talk to the leader, the guy with the V name, and he explains that they are the Slags.
Yeah.
That's what they call themselves. We
Why
are the
would
Slags.
You call yourself that?
I don't know.
Of all the names, you could be the underground people. You could be just some people.
Yeah. It's like, no, we're the Slags.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so their story is these are folks who have descended from a militia that holed up underground before the war and they spent kind of vault-like, spent a couple, a century or so here underground. And in the process, they mutated, evolved differently, like were exposed to radiation, and they became these things called slags. And in particular, they don't like the sunlight. It hurts their eyes. It burns them. Mm-hmm. They prefer to go out at night. But, you know, they've been underground forever, and they're sort of like running out of supplies and things to do down here. So they built a farm on the top side. And that's where the ghost farm came from.
I like when you say that they ran out of things to do.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, it's not a big area. It's not as big as a vault, right?
No, it's not. Well, yeah, it's as big as one level of a vault, probably.
Right.
And there's only like 15 people. And what's really interesting about what he says is he basically says, we have too many people down here now. Like, we have to expand. That's part of the reason we got to get more food. And I'm just like, there's only 20 of y'all.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's sort of his explanation. And you can ask him about Carl. You can be like, well, what happened to Carl? If you guys are so interested in not murdering everyone, you, the deformed descendants of a militia.
Of a militia.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, that's... I don't know how much weight we are supposed to attach to that.
Now, pray tell, Michael, what kind of militias, you know, historically have dug big bunkers to preserve their people after a long-form nuclear annihilation?
Specifically in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, there is a reading here that the Slags were a white supremacist militia, because that's sort of, like, in terms of cultural context, that's the sort of militia that would be in this region doing these sorts of things.
Yeah, especially in the 90s, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird. What I really liked about this, though, he says right after that, what I really liked about that is that it demonstrates, and this is something that falls out of, I think, all of the other Fallout games, that there were other people who were like, yeah, we need to make vaults. You know, I mean, it's not a vault, right? But it's the same idea. There were other than vault tech and this kind of, like, you know, military-industrial complex kind of thing that got everyone underground, or got a lot of people underground. There were just lots of people on the Earth being like, dang, we need to dig a hole in the ground, and we need to live there for the foreseeable future, for the next 160 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's interesting, and that just goes away in the other Fallout games. The idea that
there are people who survive outside the vaults, but that's kind of accidental. No one was really planning. Well, yeah. I guess, technically, if we're... New Vegas, Mr. House had some plans, but he is presented as very unique, and also, like, he is unique in the breadth and scope of his plans, so.
Yeah, and they also, but he also kind of fits into, well, something else that happens in Fallout 3, too, I guess. We have, like, a corollary or an equivalent of his whole deal. Don't want to spoil Fallout 3, but we get a little bit of that too. Anyway, and there's also like the Institute that shows up in Fallout 4 and Fallout 3 as well, which has a similar vibe. But that's all to say, you know, there's not a lot of just randos out there, you know, living their life.
Right.
Well, what'd you do about the slags here, Michael?
So, the next thing that I could say after Vegir, I guess that's his name, Vegir.
Vesemir.
after Elminster. explains to me what happened. I could be like, well, what about all those corpses? And he's like, oh yeah, this is so fucking weird. He's like, oh yeah, those are all fake. We made those with like Brahmin guts in old clothes.
Yeah, we know that humans are a cowardly and superstitious lot who will never approach something that appears to be a murdered corpse on a stick. One would definitely just walk up to it and look at it. And that's the thing too, is when you get here on the outside and you click on any of that stuff, you get a little, you know, over the head dialogue. It's like, this looks fishy.
Yeah, and I didn't bother doing any of that. I didn't inspect any of these corpses. So when I popped back up, I looked at them, and it was just like, this is clearly fake. This is just clearly a fake thing. Anyway, yeah, so the Slags have Scooby-Dooed the entire town of MODOK. And I return and tell this to Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of like, oh, weird. That's bizarre. But also, I guess, the Slags do not want to fight, despite being the descendants of a militia, right? They do not want to go to war with MODOK. They would, in fact, like to be accepted. And I communicate this, and it sort of surprisingly just kind of works out.
Seems good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how it ends.
Yep.
Which is not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Michael.
Right, it's like, clearly, like, when I'm talking to Joe, I can basically just be like, oh yeah, no, they're all, like, horrible monsters, like, let's, you know, let's raise a posse and go destroy them. I could mm-hmm. do that. But then the other option is just like, oh no, they're fine, they're cool. Carl's, as I told you, Carl's in the den, all those corpses, they're just fake. It's just some folks, you can trade with them.
I think what's interesting about the areas of this game so far is that you can really feel the difference in imagination on the design side, right? Just mm-hmm. like, even just thinking about the ways that all these pieces interact with one another. In next episode, we're going to be talking about Vault City, and it's got a lot going on. Like, there's a lot of ways of thinking about the space of Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
In that thing, a lot of different pathways.
Yes,
and so it just makes MODOK look real bad. And MODOK, I think, looks bad compared to the den that we just did.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
So yeah, so that ended basically the same for Tungsten. There was no real difference there.
No, exact same going through the paces. I set up a trading relationship between the two. I think they're getting water and crops from the Slags now. Wow. Yep.
Yeah. No one cares about church still.
Nope. Still no one cares about church. Like, not even a little bit, but they do care about the bed and breakfast.
They do.
Did you do this quest?
So are you talking about the chicken coop?
I'm not. I didn't do that. Oh. I remembered the chicken coop, but I didn't think Tungsten would be up to it.
So I didn't do the chicken coop either. If you're listening and you have never played Fallout 2 or your memory's a little dusty about this, there's a bed and breakfast. It's called Rose's Bed and Breakfast, and there is a chicken coop out back that has, like, a barbed wire fence around it, some guard dogs, and there are just massive boulders, like, rolled up to the doors to keep the chickens inside. Mm-hmm. And in the bed and breakfast, you can get an omelet, and one of the other characters you talk to in town tells you it's like, oh, the best omelet, it's so revitalizing, but I don't know about that chicken, because most chickens don't lay 15-pound eggs. I also didn't do this because from my perspective, like from a role-playing perspective, what Twelinor did was she went into the bed and breakfast, like she heard this rumor, she went into the bed and breakfast, she talked to Rose, and she was like, I would like an omelet, please. And was served an omelet. Twelinor ate it, and the text told me, like, you feel fully revitalized. And Twelinor thought, like, well, okay, that checks out. That was an omelet, like... None of my business why she's got it you know, blockaded like that. So that's the end of that.
None of my concern.
Right?
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it too. So spoilies. I mean, it would be spoiled if we did the quest, but so you can open up the gate, you can go in there, you can kill these guard dogs, you can roll these boulders out of the way or blow them up, I think too. You can use dynamite. Mm-hmm. open up the door for the chicken coop, and lo and behold, guess what's in there? It's a death claw. And then you got to fight it, or just let it loose. I guess you could just run away.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I knew that was there. I remembered this quest from playing the game before, and that just seemed like a lot of stuff to do right now. Maybe I'll come back and ruin this town. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't seem like it's hurting anybody, really.
Right.
But I did do one other quest. Did you do the Golden Watch quest?
Oh, boy. So I tried. How did this work out for you?
Oh, you didn't complete it?
I did not, no.
Huh. Okay. So I remembered this quest, too. Weirdly enough, did not remember the ghost thing at all, but remembered both of these, like, bed and breakfast things. There's a guy named Cornelius, and he has a friend. Do you remember his friend's name?
Farrell.
Farrell. So I'm just walking around, and I meet Farrell, and Farrell's like, hey, my best friend Cornelius lost his watch, and he's blaming me for stealing it. He says I stole his watch. I didn't steal his watch. It's pissing me off. Just FYI.
Yeah.
So I go in, I talk to Cornelius. Cornelius is the co-owner of the bed and breakfast with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Cornelius, and Cornelius appears to be, and I'm not saying this as a joke in any way, appears to be in the advanced stages of dementia.
Yeah, it took me a while to figure this out because, I mean, I'm sure if you look at him, it mentions that he's older or something, mm-hmm. but yeah. I did not clock that. And so it was just like this character saying really bizarre nonsense to me, and I was like, what in the hell is going on?
Yeah, he responds to basically everything you say with a non sequitur, or he is, you know, just referring to all kinds of different stuff. But he says, in part of his dialogue, he says, because you know he's lost his watch, and Farrell told you that he probably just misplaced it, and, you know, he didn't know where he put it. And then Cornelius says, I was in the outhouse the other day, and he says, like, a chicken jumped up or something.
No, it's a dog, I a think dog. He says. Yeah. A dog came out.
And tried to attack him. And so you put two and two together and you realize, haha, perhaps it was in this moment of surprise that Cornelius dropped his golden watch into the outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can go to the outhouse and you can open up the thing. You know, like a
the toilet,
but it's like a hatch on the top of the toilet.
Yeah.
And you can go down in there, and there's a pile of rocks,
and also poop,
and there is also poop everywhere.
There's lots of poop.
There's an extreme amount of poop everywhere. It really looks like the goop from the master,
mm-hmm.
more than it does poop. So if you, this is perhaps the consciousness, the distributed poop consciousness of the master.
Of all the people of MODOK.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Boom, boom, the shitster.
It's really like somebody called Kevin Smith. This was really a time of cultural production around poop and
it
poop
was.
Creatures.
It was. Yeah, no, this is only like, what, 2 years before Dogma or something like that?
Yeah, it was the time of South Park and poop jokes. Mm-hmm. The Halcyon days.
Yes.
But anyway, so what you can do here is you can blow up these rocks. Did you blow up these rocks?
I did not, because, well, first of all, so this happened, and my immediate thought was like, this quest is so stupid. This is just the stupidest thing. Like, I felt insulted that this quest existed because it was just so stupid. Like, talking to Farrell, him talking about I was also kind of predisposed toward Farrell. Did you go to Farrell's garden?
No.
Oh, okay. So, like, actually, the first thing that Farrell did with me was, like, talk about how he had a problem in his garden. He said that there was something, like, he has a garden that he's been tending, trying to get to grow, and there's something big there. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Hmm.
I wonder why he didn't tell you about this. But anyway.
I don't know.
He was like, will you go check out my garden? And I'm like, oh, something big. What could this be? So I agree. I go to it. He teleports me to his garden. It's one of these quests. And it's just filled with, like, a dozen rats. So then I have to go around and kill a dozen rats. And I can't shoot them because the rats are running through the rows of the crops. Or rather, I can shoot them, but it's, like, really hard because the rats are running through the rows of the crops and, like, a stalk of corn in front of one of the rats counts as a block. So, like, I can't shoot through the crops to the rats. I have to be, like, walking up and down the rows, and it's amazingly tedious because you're in combat the entire time. And then I finish, and I go back, and I'm like, well, okay, that's done. I go back and talk to Pharrell, and he says nothing. He gives me nothing. He mentions nothing. The quest does not count as completed because it's glitched. Like, one of the rats, like, it's a known glitch. One of the rats does not actually spawn in, so it never gets counted as dead. Jeez. So that happened. And then he told
that's
me...
That's very funny. It never existed, so it cannot be killed.
Yes.
That's a real galaxy brain move.
So then he told me about the pocket watch, and I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll do the pocket watch. And then I went and talked with, Cornelius.
Yukon Cornelius?
Yes, Yukon Cornelius. And as I said, Cornelius was very confusing to me. And then I figured out, like, oh, he's supposed to have dementia. But then also, I will say, the other thing, you said that, like, you made it clear, right? To say that Cornelius has dementia is not intended by us to be funny. It is an observation of how the game is written. Mm-hmm. The game very clearly wants you to think this is hysterical.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good point to make. The game thinks it's real funny.
Yeah,
no. It is really not. It's more annoying than anything else.
Yeah, no. The game thinks it's just, like, the funniest thing on earth that this man is talking in non sequiturs and, like, doesn't know that he's married to his wife and... Yeah. So on and so forth. So I'm just like, oh, this is so stupid. And then it's like, oh, he dropped his pocket watch in the outhouse, in the toilet, in a bunch of poop. How great. Love it. And then I crawl down into the toilet, and there's this pile of rocks, and I have nothing to break them up with. However, I had noticed that Joe, back at the general store, was selling dynamite, I think.
Oh, hell yeah, he was.
Yeah. So I go back to get some of this. I had not realized you could just loot him. And I have basically spent a huge amount of Twelinor's money on ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent that I don't really have a lot of, extra spending money. So I just didn't have any money to buy the dynamite. It was, like, too expensive. And I was like, well, that's okay, because, like, from my perspective, this is the point where Twelinor says, this is very stupid, and I just do not care.
So I went down there, and I saved my game beforehand, because my memory of this, I remembered all this stuff so well, partially because when I was playing this on my Windows 98 PC... whenever the hell I played this game for the first time, anytime an explosion animation played, it would just crash the game.
Wow.
So I always had to, like, set the timer, run away, scroll off the screen, have the explosion happen, and then go back. And sometimes it would still crash the game anyway. I don't know why. It was the 90s. Things just crash your computer all the time, which is definitely unlike now. Lifeline. Insert lifeline here.
Okay. Okay. I was like, what? What?
So I go and I plant this explosive and I go up the ladder and I've saved my game. And when you climb the ladder after planting the explosion just happens, right? Because there's so much methane down there. There's so much poop. It happens and then there is poop everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everywhere, all over everything. It's all over the buildings, the textures change, all kinds of stuff. Okay?
Yeah.
Sulik is nowhere to be found.
Uh-oh.
Sulik is obliterated by the poop explosion. Like, I run around and look for him. I, like, try to see where he's at. Nowhere. Sulik has been killed by poop.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
So I load my game. I tell Sulik to wait in the bed and breakfast. I blow up the outhouse again. I go back, and I thought, oh, I wonder if, you know, the bed and breakfast, I wonder if they have anything to say about the fact that I just blew up this outhouse in what is a massive explosion. No, doesn't change dialogue. No one cares, even a little bit. I go down there. There's a mole rat. I stab it to death. I get a pocket watch out of its loot pile. I go all the way back. I give it to Feral, and he's like, haha, now I can give it to Cornelius and prove everyone I'm not a thief. Mm-hmm. The end.
The end.
The end. There are two other small quests I did, actually, now that we have talked about it. I did one where I protected a Brahmin herd from some dogs.
I didn't do that. Who did you do that for?
The guy who works in the slaughterhouse, but not in the slaughterhouse. He's like in the house right beside it. You talk to him weirdly enough, and you like exhaust your dialogue options. And when you talk to him again, he has like a little quest for you.
That would explain. Because yeah, I talked to him. I exhausted my dialogue options, and then I was done. I didn't talk to him again.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I think I was just trying to figure out, like, more information about the ghost thing. But yeah, I mean, it gives you a little bit of experience, but it's basically the same thing we've done several times in the game now. You go somewhere, dogs show up, and you gotta fight them. Not super complicated. I also used a crowbar and some rope to go down into the town well in the middle of town, and people had thrown a bunch of coins down there.
Huh.
Yeah. And then I took him to the coin star, and okay, it wasn't working.
Okay, at the Safeway. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You get it?
Uh huh.
I just came up with that joke. Is that funny, or? I mean, what do you think?
I think that's mid level. That's mid tier.
Okay.
that'll play in Tulsa.
But that's it. That's what MODOK's up to. I don't think there's any more complicated stuff about it.
There are a couple more things that I did or didn't do. The first one was I helped a sick cow.
Why?
A sick Brahmin.
Why would you do that?
Because I could. There's like this. There's this sick Brahmin like lying on the ground outside the slaughterhouse.
Dang.
It's just like lying there, and you look at it, and it's like this Brahmin is sick. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you can pull out Doctor from your skill decks.
Mm-hmm.
And because I have just high, like, I failed a couple times, like, I couldn't do anything, but I have just high enough that I could do this. And eventually it worked, and I healed the Brahmin's broken leg, at which point it followed me around the entire map of the town. Just, like, literally, like, followed me into the bed and breakfast. So it's me, Sulik, Vic, and this cow. Like, walk into the bed and breakfast. Other than that, like, it doesn't do anything. And, like, once I left and came back, it stopped following me. I think it, like, disappeared. Mm-hmm. But that was a thing. I got a little bit of experience for that. There is also a missing child here. Did you encounter any bits of this?
I did. I saw, like, the grieving mother, but she wouldn't speak to me. And so I couldn't, I didn't know how to start it.
Yeah, so yeah, there's this, yeah, she is the wife of Baltus, who is the tanner, and she's just, like, standing in their house, and she has one of the overhead dialogue things that pops up, and it says, it's something, it's like, oh, I wish I could find my son, or something, just something really bizarre.
I wish and my you can't child wasn't missing.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you would expect to be able to then talk to her about that, but no, that's all that happens. That's all she'll do.
Well, Michael, so it's much like The Secret. You got to speak it into the world to make it happen. And you know what? Yeah. You went and did the quest, so it must have worked.
No. No, I did not.
Uh-oh. I've been hoisted.
Yes. So then I went and I talked to her husband, Baltus, again, the tanner, and I was like, maybe this is how you start the quest. He does not mention his missing son at all.
Oh.
Not one bit. Here's the third part.
Uh-oh.
In the slag cavern, you can find their son. His name is Johnny. There's like a bunch of little children sort of like off, there's like a little second area to the map, and it's just where all of the slag children are hanging out, but one of them is not a slag child. It's Johnny. And you can talk to him, and he's just like, I'm Johnny. Like, I'm hanging out down here. And the only other option I had was to say to him, would you like some candy? At which point, he screams and goes, stranger, stranger, and runs away. And then all of the slag children just, like, freak out and start running around. And that's it. I know there's a quest here. I had to look this up to figure out what was going on. You need a perception check in order to realize that the woman with the missing... So you, the character, mm-hmm. need a perception check to realize that the woman who is Balthus's wife, who is talking about their missing son, you need the perception check in order to bring that up with Balthus himself and get the quest.
That's bad.
Right?
That's bad and, design.
And I was like, what? Like, Twelinor is like 1 point short of the perception needed.
Uh-huh.
It's like you need a perception of 7, and I had a perception of 6. Again, yeah, as you say, it's bad. It's bad and it's weird because, like, I can clearly see the outlines of the quest, but I can't initiate it or do it. And that's that, right? That's MODOK, I guess.
That is cursed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care for that at all. I don't know. It's you know, it's rare for me. Well, maybe not. I bet people can find a supercut of me saying this, but I feel like it's rare for me to say something is just outright bad, right? As far mm-hmm. as design is concerned, it just sometimes has different goals than what I'm going for, right? That's bad. That's objectively bad. You should mm-hmm. not do that. You shouldn't have like things that are blatantly obvious to a player. She even says repeatedly, Johnny.
Mm-hmm. Yes, should, right. Should, like, that's how, yeah.
So, that's bad. Cut it from the game.
Mm-hmm. And,
I'll destroy it.
So that's the weird detour that is MODOK.
Yep. Michael, you got anything to plug?
Nope.
You can go to twitter.com/rangetouch to find out about all the other stuff we do. You can go to youtube.com/rangetouch in order to see more videos. You're probably watching this video on that very website. You can go to patreon.com to support us for as little as $1 a month. At $3 a month, though, you can get access to the podcast feed for Too Much Future if you want to listen to this on the go if, while you're, I don't know, using a chainsaw or, I don't know, doing long-distance running. Or mm-hmm. any of the things you could do in between those.
Summoning Karl Rove.
Summoning Karl Rove. Or
oh, wait, no, not Karl Rove. Karl Rove is dead, though, isn't he?
No.
I meant Rumsfeld.
Why do you
I
think everyone together. From the Bush administration's dead?
It's wishful thinking, Cameron. It's the secret. I am speaking it into the world.
but yeah, I don't think I have any other stuff. Yeah. All right. Well, all right. Next episode, we're going to Vault City, where we were meant to go this entire time.
And as always, war never changes, but Fallout sure does. Everything changed.